Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is CBS, Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome my colleague Jonathan Schanzer, Executive Director, Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. We go immediately to the ceasefires in and around the conflict with Israel these last months. The ceasefire in Gaza, the ceasefire in Lebanon, the unknowns of the West Bank, the unknowns of Syria, and a new story, Iran and Russia in the conversation. But we begin with the hostages. Jonathan, a very good evening to you. The numbers move around of how many living, how many dead. There's also the question of the ceasefire still underway, and yet Mr. Netanyahu is said to have alerted 400,000 reservists of a momentary possibility of a call-up. Where is the hostage conversation? Last I checked, Hamas had rejected everything. Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. I believe that Hamas, at least as of Tuesday, had still rejected every possibility that has been floated. What has been offered is a reprieve for about 6 weeks. It is the plan of the Israelis, and this is backed by Stephen Witkoff, the advisor to Donald Trump, the envoy to the Middle East. The goal here is to keep the fighting at bay through the holy month of Ramadan and through the holiday of Passover. This would take us until roughly mid-April, at which point perhaps fighting would resume. During that time, as I understand it, the Israelis are offering a large amount of humanitarian assistance to flow into the Gaza Strip. This will actually have the benefit of really doing two things for Hamas. On the one hand, this is the way that they maintain at least some administrative control in the Gaza Strip. They hijack the aid. Everyone knows that they do this, and this is a way of maintaining at least some power in the region. The other is actually designed to perhaps deal with the growing grumbling among the Gazan public. They're unhappy with what has transpired. Obviously, their homes are destroyed. The entire Gaza Strip is in rubble. And so for Hamas to be able to offer this, that is, I think, a perk. The problem is, for them, they had phase two already set. Phase two of this deal, we've just finished phase one. Phase two was designed to facilitate the exit, the permanent exit of the Israeli military, to declare an end of the fighting and to leave Hamas intact as the rulers in Gaza. This is not something the Israelis are willing to countenance. Hence the phase 1.5, as the Israelis are calling it, that is now being considered here. It is touch and go. We don't know whether Hamas will accept this in the long run. But I think that is why the Israelis have cut off assistance from flowing into the Gaza Strip, and they've called up the military. What they're doing right now is they're putting all their cards on the table, and they're showing Hamas what awaits them if they don't agree to this phase 1.5 of the hostage deal.
What do we know about the decision-making at Hamas? Is it done by the so-called negotiators in Cairo or Doha? Is it done by the what's left of the gang underground? Who says yay or nay?
So Hamas has always operated with multiple leaders making decisions in concert. That has changed a bit since this war, where Yahya Sinwar, before he was struck down by the IDF, was making most of the decisions. His brother now, Mohammed Sinwar, remains at the helm on the ground in Gaza. But I think now he is losing some power. Obviously, he does not have the kind of command of the Hamas military, such as it is, by the way, it's already weakened significantly. But Mohammed Sinwar does not have the standing of his fallen brother. I believe that he is making these decisions along with Khalil al-Hayya, who is a Hamas political leader that is based, I believe, right now in Qatar, but travels often to places like Lebanon, Iran, and Turkey. But the number of people who are making these decisions is much smaller than it used to be, which I think allows for a more centralized decision-making process. The big question that I don't know how to answer is whether the Qataris are trying to put a thumb on the scale to tip the negotiations in one way or another. I get the sense now that the Qataris have lost a bit of leverage and they are maybe feeling a bit more heat from the Trump administration to just get a deal done to facilitate the release of more hostages and to try to bring about an end of Hamas rule in the Gaza Strip. It'll be interesting to see how they respond.
Who gains from the stalling? Is anybody making money?
Oh, for sure. The Egyptians are making money as they continue to smuggle across the border, across that Philadelphia corridor. We continue to see weapons and ammo that are actually traveling by drone, by and large. It's not a huge amount of business, but it's business nonetheless. There are people, and the rumors are that General Abdel Fattah al-Sisi's son is involved in this, and that is the accepting of roughly $5,000 per head to bring Gazans out of the Gaza Strip and to bring them into Egypt where they can travel on freely wherever they wish. The smuggling that continues along the border with Jordan, this is something that, of course, is highly lucrative for those smugglers, as well as smugglers in Syria that are connected to the old Iranian-backed regime of Bashar al-Assad, but now appear to be making money through the new leaders there, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham. So there is a wartime economy that is humming along here. I think it'll probably continue whether or not the Gaza war ends or whether it continues in full force. But there are certainly war profiteers across the board right now that have been enjoying this moment.
We go north to the other ceasefire. The headline in the Times of Israel, Lebanon's Ayoun, who is the leader, Saudi crown prince, that would be MBS, call for Israeli pullout from all of Lebanon. Question here is, Ayoun contributing to this success, if it's going to be, is he in any way conducting himself with regard to Hezbollah that is new?
No, I think, you know, bottom line, John, is that, you know, this is the former head of the LAF, which did nothing while Hamas armed. Ayoun, a lot of people right now are pointing to him as the savior of Lebanon, but I have yet to see him really exert himself politically or to deploy the Lebanese armed forces in a way that would inspire confidence. What we have right now is a situation where Israel is still deployed in key areas across southern Lebanon. The Lebanese government, such as it is, has reported that it has interdicted some cash that has come in through the airport. And there was actually somebody who was caught the other day trying to bring in $2.5 million destined for Hezbollah. But this is not enough, if we're to be quite frank about what's going on here. Lebanon is still a failed state. The government does not control the flow of arms or the deployment of military forces or paramilitary forces. Hezbollah is still a strong actor, and that is, I think, still something to be concerned about. The more money that flows in, the more those salaries will be paid. And the more those salaries are paid, the more likely it is that Hezbollah will begin to wield that what is left of its arsenal, which is estimated to be somewhere between 50 and 60,000 weapons. This has yet to be tackled. And so Ayoun has done little to improve the situation of his countrymen so far.
Mohammed bin Salman greeted al-Shara from Damascus recently, met him off the airplane. Now Mohammed bin Salman is greeting President Ayoun and talking peace. What is MBS's role here? Who's he? Where is he going?
Well, MBS, I think, is trying to get a sense of whether there is room for a new Middle East. right? There's a lot of talk right now about the rebuilding of the Gaza Strip, but there's also the question of the future of Syria. This is very much a state in flux since the fall of Assad. I think the Saudis are trying to essentially steer this new government out of the hands of Turkey, which is a Muslim Brotherhood supporter and a malign actor in the region. So that's one. Then you've got the Lebanese front. That's another state in flux where Hezbollah is weaker, but the fate of that country is yet to be decided. When one looks around the map of the Middle East right now, John, we see that there is immense opportunity for reform, even for peace, for end of conflict, for perhaps even the neutering of the Iran-backed threat on multiple fronts. And there are a few actors that can help guide that from within the Arab world. The Saudis are one such actor. And I, for one, am pleased to see MBS taking matters into his own hands and trying to see what is possible. I don't know whether he will be successful in reorganizing the moderate forces in the region, but I think it's positive that he is trying to figure out what he can do.
And to the West Bank, since we talked last week, I've been told that there is a Hamas element in the West Bank. There are other bad actors there as well. But I did not understand the scale of the threat. I believe the IDF has pre-positioned troops in and around Jenin. And what I'm told is that there was a plot, now thwarted or at least interrupted, to launch a October 7th murder raid, kidnapping and murder, against the Judean Samaria. Is that accurate, Jonathan?
Look, I think what we're hearing right now, John, out of the IDF is a lot of different reports. Not all of them have been confirmed. My understanding right now is that, A, Israel was lucky last week in finding these explosives that did not detonate on multiple buses. The goal was to carry out a mass casualty attack during rush hour, and the Israelis discovered this plot really by mistake. A handful of the bombs went off early. They were the timers were not set properly, and that alerted authorities. From there, that sent the IDF and the Shin Bet into the West Bank, where they started to learn more about the multiple factions that have been forged by the Iranians, by Hamas, by Palestinian Islamic Jihad. People are saying that these are informal networks or less established, or they're groups that don't identify as Hamas or Islamic Jihad, but have helped to be stood up by the IRGC, the Iranians, as well as their Palestinian proxies. The extent of this network, from what we understand, is large. They have significant reach throughout the West Bank. This is the result of the smuggling that has taken place along the Jordanian border, Israel's longest border with any other country. This has been an eye-opening experience for the Israelis. And what we're watching is a frantic effort right now to purge whatever threats there are from the West Bank. That is going to require a significant amount of Israeli forces.
And the Syrian frontier, Israel remains camped, I believe, on the DMZ in Mount Hermon and does not have plans to leave it. What is the thinking in the IDF about Syria? Darkness visible, a threat, or so cut up, so balkanized, and no longer a threat?
I think they're still looking at Syria as a threat. They understand that the government, such as it is in Syria, is al-Qaeda, and it is backed by Turkey, which would love nothing more than to undermine Israeli security from this outpost that they have created. I do think that the country is balkanized to some extent. You've got Druze areas and you've got Alawite areas that are outside of the control of the central government, at least for a time. The Israelis continue to watch with alarm about possible incursions by the Syrian military into the Druze community. Israel has vowed to its own Druze community that it will work to protect the Druze. This is the the only red line that we have seen thus far, other than Israel vowing that it will vanquish any forces that are deployed in the southern area, which the Israelis are calling the Southern Security Zone, where they are saying no armed forces can be deployed. Right now, it's an uneasy understanding between Israel and the government in Syria. Whether it holds is the big question right now. And I see tensions simmering, but not boiling over, which I suppose is the good news here.
Jonathan Schanzer, Executive Director for the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LifeLock and use promo code iHeart or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Life's messy. We're talking spills, stains, pets, and kids. But with Anabae, you never have to stress about messes again. At washablesofas.com, discover Anabae sofas, the only fully machine washable sofas inside and out, starting at just $699. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, that means fewer stains and more peace of mind. Designed for real life, our sofas feature changeable fabric covers, allowing you to refresh your style anytime. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa effortlessly. Perfect for cozy apartments or spacious homes. Plus, they're earth-friendly and built to last. That's why over 200,000 happy customers have made the switch. Upgrade your space today. Visit washablesofas.com now and bring home a sofa made for life. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.